Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
The World Atlas of Cheese by Nancy Erkoff-Stork from 1976. World and Cheese View, a classic. And we've worked our way through all of Europe, including the Soviet Union, all the, I suppose they could be interesting, but definitely out of date, views of different countries, and sort of, ideas of, cheese as being a sort of fallback nutrient source of a population which can, extract the nutrients, protein nutrients, and we get into large cities, urban cities, communication, and other things like that. And so we've gone through Europe, North America, Canada, which is a bit bizarre, and America, which is sort of almost depressing, but interesting in the way that's such an expansive superpower. Central America. From Mexico is a narrow, pinched-in waistline at the isthmus of Tehuantepec. The twin ranges of the Sierra Madre extend northwards. One range runs parallel to the Pacific, the other along the Gulf of Mexico. Between them, at an average height of 1,820 meters, stretches the vast plateau of Anahuac. So it's a beautiful geography and cheese mixed together. We'll make it into cheese really soon. On this plateau, on the site of Mexico City, there once stood a capital of the Aztec Empire, Tenochtitlan. There was an imperial mount of Montezuma, emperor of the emperor of the Aztecs. Nearby was another great culture, the Mayans, which reached back to its peak between 300 and 900 AD. The Mayans occupied the Yucatan Peninsula, most of Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. Although a highly advanced civilization, the Mayans lacked some of the essential elements for survival. They had no pack animals, no plows, no wagons. These facts cast doubt on the supposition that they were ever in contact with Oriental cultures, where these aids were so extensively, used so extensively. Although their culture disintegrated, there's still about 1 million Mayans who live almost in the same way as their ancestors did 1,400 years ago. The Aztec culture, by way of contrast, came at a sudden and violent end in 1519. In that year, Hernando Cortes landed with 600 Spanish adventurers and deposed a mighty emperor of the Aztecs who ruled all of Mexico. 2 years after Cortes had first set eyes on Tenochtitlan, Montezuma was dead. His precious treasures, plunders, his great culture died with him. A Spanish priest soon after the conquest recorded his impressions of the many local foods and drinks. Cheese was not among them, the items listed. Domestic animals were first brought into the New World by the Spanish. The cattle were probably longhorns, but were unable to adapt to the climate, the food, and the altitude. Later they were supplemented by brown Swiss and Hereford cows, and from the various breeds, the hybrid Mexican cows were developed. Where Cortes had landed, the conquistadors founded a seaport of Veracruz, which became a flourishing trading center. They attempted, as conquerors will, to introduce the natives to Spanish customs and religions and to establish some of the comforts of home, many of which included the making of cheese. As far as the Mexicans were concerned, though, the value of cattle lay in their ability to provide meat and leather, and their attractiveness as an exportable commodity, cheese, had a low priority. Cattle had been kept mainly in the highlands of northern Mexico, where they had been bred for export to the USA. Before the First World War, there were only a few small cheese factories near Mexico cities. On farms in the rest, the milk was made into cheese, the curd being pressed by hand and dried in the shade. Between the First and Second World Wars, the land taken from large estates was given to the Indian peasants. That's an interesting thing. I don't know how that happened. After 45, economic growth began to expand Mexico, but there was still very little dairy production. Most farmers kept only a few cows to suit their limited needs. On large estates, things were different. Herds of cattle give excellent milk yields, but even here, progressive farming is hampered by the scarcity of and the cost of fodder. Mexican cheese, Asadero and Oaxana, is a fresh and easily melted cheese that's made from the early days of the farm of Oaxana in southern Mexico, but now mostly in cheese factories. It is plastic curd cheese like provolone, which is kneaded curd and is pulled into threads. They are wrapped together in a ball, but the brine for 10 minutes, then packed in a plastic bag for immediate sale. The cheese is eaten with beer and bread and tortillas. Anchoa is a white, dry cheese with a crumbly texture, usually made from skimmed goat's meat. Milk. The cheese each weighs between 5 and 10 kilograms and are usually packed in jute in groups of six. Enchilado is the name given to angio when covered with a thick coat of chili powder, giving the cheese a red rind. It has a strong taste and is the best used mixed with more chili powder to fill pancakes. One of the few types with a foreign influence is queso del Bola, similar to Eden. There are a lot of queso fresco, fresh cheese to be found in all Latin American countries under different names. Tamales, tortillas were enjoyed in the court of Montezemas, can be filled, accompanied by pluk, an alcoholic drink made from the sap of agave species. Other Central American countries, Guatemala, bordering Mexico, and Honduras are predominantly mountainous. Only a small part of the country is given over to pastoral land of cattle and sheep. In the 1920s, good livestock were imported, but more for meat than for milking. Cheese making is of little or no importance, being only for home consumption. Honduras has a greater area of pasture land, over 35% of its territory. The cattle breeding is of great value to the economy. The country is largely mountainous, though, which creates transportation difficulties. Practically every farm makes its own cheese, which it supplies to the cities, and a quantity is imported. El Salvador is the smallest and yet most densely populated country of South America. El Salvador is divided into three wide different parts by two mountain chains, the Sierra Maestra de Notra along the Honduras border, and the Casana Cosara running parallel to the coast. The plateau between enjoys a moderate climate and is very fertile, with ample pastures for cattle breeding. A considerable quantity of cheese is made, and in particular the fresh types, which are usually appreciated in the hot countries for the keen taste. Queso Enredo is a fresh cheese also made in Honduras. Enredo means twisted together, for this is a pasta filta type of cheese, like the Italian provolone. The curd whey mixture is heated in earthenware pots on an open fire and salt added. This is Central America continued. Cheese maker next pulls the curd into threads, which are then molded together to form flat cheeses of 60 to 80 grams. Queso Coyolito is a semi-hard cheese made in the southeast. When the milk yield from one farm is insufficient, it is combined with the milk from other farms. The whole milk is curdled, and the curd is cut into pieces each size of a nut. After a rest period of 30 to 45 minutes, the whey is drained off. The curd is left to increase in acidity before it is formed. After a 6-hour stay in a brine bath, it is taken out and washed with coconut milk. The curd is again divided into pieces and pressed for 10 days, followed by a 20-day ripening period, during which time they periodically rubbed with salt. The cheese given is a loaf shape before marketing, and is sold in the immediate neighborhood. It has a tough but elastic texture and a piquant taste. Nicaragua also makes its cheese, probably just sufficient for its own need. Costa Rica has cattle, that's what Nicaragua's done. Costa Rica has cattle and makes quite a lot of cheese. Cheese factories have already been established there at the beginning of this century. K. Cuba, the Pearl of Antilles, and the largest of the West Indian Islands, is situated at the entrance to the Gulf of Mexico. Its coastline is flat, with sandbanks and coral reefs. Inland, plains are fertile and the climate is healthy. Cortes took part of his conquest, in the conquest of Cuba under the command of Diego Velasque. He settled on an estate was there for the first time that Europeans honed cattle were imported. Yet, in spite of the advantage, Cuba has not become a dairy country. Cattle herds are luxury, kept for meat rather than for milk. There is a native cattle breed, and there are even purebred Jersey and Holstein cows. Quite a bit of Prat grass is made, a hard cheese similar to Gouda, made from wholly or partly skimmed milk. The cheese, one of Cuba's best, has a Gouda shape, weighs from 4 to 5 kilograms, is covered with red wax and wrapped in a red cellophane paper. Jamaica, with its beautiful grassland and good cattle, has nevertheless undeveloped cheese industry. Haiti imports much of its cheese from the USA. The Dominican Republic has ranches on which cattle are bred, and its farmers keep a few cattle at home for use, but, like Jamaica and Haiti, has little to offer in the way of indigenous cheeses. Puerto Rico, the smallest of the West Indian Islands, does possess a few cheeses worthy of mention. The greater part of the island is fertile, hilly country with good grazing land. The cattle are raised to be used as draft animals as well as for their meat and milk. The Zebu breed, imported from Senegal, was crossed bred with the island cattle, and the result of hybrids were more adaptable and more valuable than the parent breeds. Queso La Paz and Queso de la Tierra is a white cheese that is eaten fresh when soft, as it's soft Scottish cheese is made on farms and in factories. The farm cheeses are mostly smaller in size, weigh 1.5 kilograms. A ripened variety of cheese also sold, which is hard and bitter. The Queso de Presin is a hard cheese of whole milk. Queso de Pruna is a cottage, like a cottage cheese, but it's given a firm shape by using a cheese mold. In addition to these home types, much of the cheese in Puerto Rico is imported. Reading across. Now we get on to South America. Venezuela. It's interesting to talk about Venezuela and the Guyanas. The 19th century American consul of Venezuela was surprised into commenting on the fact that the nation with less than 3 million inhabitants, that is, less people than cows, should have to import great quantities of butter and cheese. These dairy products were consumed mostly entirely by the big cities. Venezuelans living in remote countries, areas thought to prefer fresh fruit at their disposal, despite the lesser food value, as being more refreshing in the extreme heat. But even country people had hankered after the expensive foreign cheeses, they would not have been able to afford them. There were, however, their own fresh cheeses for them to choose, which are made locally. Queso de Chinco, a popular cheese with still made in farms, preparation is simple. Fresh milk with starter and salt is left as cheese vat for 24 hours until coagulated and then hung in sacks so that the whey can flow out. It's a very soft cheese with many holes, and it's always eaten fresh. Queso Lanero is made the same way, but the curd is placed in molds and becomes hard and crumbly. Its strong taste is used for baking and for grating finished dish. Queso al Damano is made from, has its name from the fact that the curd is worked by hand until the right consistency is achieved. Then it's put in layers in a wooden mold where it remains for 24 hours. As Venezuela is a banana in maize country, naturally the leaves of the two foodstuffs that were put to good use. Both keep the cheeses moist and give the cheeses their own special aroma. The young Queso de Mano is packed in banana leaves, which are prepared by cutting away through the middle ribs, pulling the leaves into small rectangles in the direction of the grain, and then rubbing them in cold water. Maize leaves are used to pack cure jata, a cheese from the Andes which resembles queso de chinco, except the extra cream is used in its making. Queso de cabra is a very popular cheese malted by hand into a pear shape as a real goaty taste. In Venezuela, the cheese is used to flavor sauces, especially cheese and tomato sauce called choritia, which accompanies boiled potatoes and meat dishes. Queso blanco features a kind of cheese and banana cake, also served with meat, to form a slightly sweet, spicy contrast. For data on this, see page 160. So they've got listed underneath here. Cheese was also introduced to the colony of Suriname by the Dutch West Indies Companies in 1620, and in the flourishing trade in the next two centuries, imports rose. Suriname's hot, moist climate, like that of the former British and French Guiana, makes the raising of cattle, therefore cheese making, very difficult. You can't make cheese in a hot climate. Colombia. The greater part of the population of Colombia lives on the slope of the Andes Mountains, on the treeless plateaus, and in the Llanos, the river valleys which the tributaries of the Amazon and Orinoco flows. Colombian has the most complete range of climatic variations, There is intensely hot forest regions, the lowland and plateaus that are temperate, and high peaks of the Andes are particularly covered with snow. Cattle breeding is confined to the temperate zones, but as the cattle are of mediocre quality, so is the milk. Most of the cheese is produced by cheese factories from pasteurized milk. One of the most important concerns is situated on the mountain slopes at Sopo, a small village north of Bogota. The factory is old and, by modern standards, unhygienic, but the number of people employed there is relatively high. The conflict of labor versus automation is not yet an economic problem in Colombia. Queso de pera, which is a cheese, is most typical of the farmhouse cheese types, a provolone-like product made exclusively by women for a recipe that has been handed down through the generations, usually by word of mouth. A few years ago, the director of the Sopo cheese factory was visiting a small factory where he was given a piece of pera cheese to eat. He found it so delicious he offered $40,000 for the recipe. Unfortunately, the woman who made it was unable to describe exactly how she did it. The director invited her to come to the factory for a month to show the workers how to produce good queso de pera. To make this plastic curd cheese, partly skimmed milk is heated from 32 degrees Celsius in a large cheese vat and slowly stirred until the milk becomes sour and coagulates. It is drained and the curd heated in hot water. A cheesemaker works the mass with a ladle until it acquires a right degree of elasticity. Small portions are then cut off and flattened to form 10 centimeters square. In the center, it is placed a piece of broccoli, a sweet made from guava fruit. This is enclosed by curd rolled up in the form of sort of long rissole, and finally wrapped in plastic. Oh my god, that's amazing cheese. Gruyère and Avital are made according to this recipe. The milk for these cheeses is standardized to 2.3% fat, and they are sold young because the pick-out flavor of ripe cheese is not very popular. This is why only briefly ripened cheeses are sold, such as Queso Sabrina, Queso Goyas, and Queso Hollandes. For these types, salt is added to the curd, which is then drained and cut into pieces at different weights. After pressing in the molds of varying shapes, the cheeses are ripened from 5 to 12 days, dipped in yellow and red paraffin wax, then wrapped in cellophane paper. Queso de Barina ripens for 8 days at room temperature, which gives a slightly piquant flavor. It has a fat content of 50% and a package weight of 222 or 260 grams in aluminium foil. Queso Azul is a blue vein type. There are several imitations of foreign cheeses as well, including a cream cheese, Queso Philadelphia. Queso Philadelphia spelled with an F. Around the city of Bogota, in the high mountain valleys, grow fine white potatoes. The people are fond of them and serve in a piquant sauce in which cheese, onions, shallots, tomatoes, cumin, oregano, black pepper are mixed. In the hotter regions, sweet calabaza and banana replace the potatoes used in dishes invented by Indians and are made even more tasty by adding fresh cheese. So that's done Colombia for you. It's Peru. In common with most countries of South America, Peru has tremendous potential in terms of agricultural mineral wealth. That reminds me of Indonesia. It's got great potential and it always will. A large proportion of the resources remain undeveloped, and there are areas of the country that have yet been thoroughly explored. Spanish colonists were the first to introduce cattle to Peru, but owing to the lack of organized farming, their cattle ran wild and there were only a few tended for their milk and meat. It's estimated that at the end of the 16th century, there was at least 100,000 cows in Peru. By the beginning of the 20th century, there had been no obvious improvement in the dairy situation, but it was made by hand for home use, and the Indians made some cheese from the mixture of 90% cow meats and 10%, goat milk. The cheese was sold in Lima and eaten fresh and still popular today. By 1926, the modern two-man dairy factories had been established in Lima, but they only supplied with pasteurized milk today. The question of whether Peru can develop a successful dairy industry is still largely ignored. The taste of queso blanca is shared by most, if not all, Latin American countries. The Peru is no exception. To make this white cheese, the milk is brought to a temperature of 82 degrees Celsius. And the starter is either citric or acetic acid is added rather than sour milk. After a few minutes stirring, the coagulant milk is left for 15 minutes, after which the whey is run off. The curd is salted and stirred in further 20 minutes at room temperature. It's laid onto molds and pressed, and the next day packaged and sold. The kind of cheese is ideal for hot countries that is prepared in a few hours. It is sourish taste and consistently like mozzarella, but although the cheese is cut, is not a good melter. Queso blanco is used in several traditional Peruvian recipes, notably dishes containing staple potatoes. The papas are boiled and served with cheese and chili sauce, or they may be mashed and seasoned with chili and lemon, and then garnished with shrimp, queso blanco, and corn and eggs. Modest reward. Peru has the greatest shortage of dairy produce, and although Swiss Peruvian organizations give help to advice on many small cheese making concerns, far too little cheese is produced. The government works continuously to correct the situation by improving pastures, importing good quality milking cattle, and encouraging the growing of cattle fodder. But due to the permanent shortage of fodder, the milk yield is zero. Still low. Another problem is that the farmer finds it impossible to fix a price for his milk that competes with the imported milk powder, usually subsidized by exporting country. The home-produced milk is mostly mixed with between 25 and 50% recombined milk to make milk powder, butter, oil, and stabilizers and water. Dairy experts visit farms to give them information about cattle care, which includes hygiene, vaccination, and correct feeding. They are the only rewarded by a modest rise in production. Realistically, when one considers that the milk tanker must negotiate some very primitive roads and cover great distances to pick up a load, and that the canoes and mules are still the most common means of transportation, it's clear that Peru's a long way to go before becoming a major cheese producer. There you go, Peru's knocked out. Argentina. Now, Argentina's got the sort of similar to Australia in terms of flat land and areas. Argentina, both sides of the Rio de Plata, which means Silver River, Argentina to the south, Uruguay to the north, are covered with pampas, the world's biggest grasslands, partly dry, partly blessed, with the ideal rainfall and modest, moderate climates. From 1580, when the Spanish under Juan de Garay, were establishing permanent settlements, they embarked upon an agrarian policy to replace the coarse grass of the pampas with the soft variety, one that aims to provide good grazing of land and cattle, since the soil was fertile and the climate favourable. Today, the whole of Argentina is agricultural. Cattle breeding is extensive. Sheep, cows graze on the pampas, and enormous numbers of sheep make Argentina one of the largest wool-producing countries in the world. Also, vast quantities of meat are salted, deep-frozen, and exported. Although the meat industry is more profitable than dairying, Argentina has developed an important dairy produce country. Following the foundation of the National Herd Book of Pedigree Cattle in 1886, special selected milk breeds have been imported, including Holstein and Jersey cows, renowned for their quality and high yields. These types were crossbred with the natives Criollos and created a breed that had the hardness and ability to the Argentine stock plus the yields of European cattle. The cheese industry got off to a slow, inauspicious start. In 1855, a certain Joseph Magnasco opened a cheesery, and with the aid of 5 employees, he developed 2 home cheeses, the Chabot and the Goya, which even today have no real status yet. In 1903, there were 324 dairy factories in Argentina. The production increased regularly, particularly during the First World War, when export prices were favourable. In 73, cheese's production was at 219,000 tonnes. Exports accounted for 6,902 tonnes, which went mainly to other South American countries. The range of Argentina's cheeses covers a lot of the European types, in addition to the home varieties. Queso Blanco, which is a typical country cheese, just like fish cheese everywhere, characterized as simplicity preparation and is one of the oldest kinds. From the time immemorial, the milk that was left over the day's surplus was hung up at the cloth to become thick and dry. The product was a fresh, sour flavour, often used in Argentinian cookies in accordance with family taste, which transcends the rules and recipes. Quadriarolo is a fresh cheese used in salads and sandwiches. And in a special dish mixed with calf's tongue and ham. Such a demand for this cheese, the manufacturer cannot maintain consistent standards. It is often sold too fresh when the paste is hard and the white and lacking flavour. Smaller Quadriarolo, with a weight of 2.5 kilograms, is known as Manticoso. Cremo, or closely related, having the same basic elements, is prepared by a different method. It is sweeter and less fruity than the Quattrarolo. Crema is similar to French Petit Suisse or Neufchâtel. Argentinian Mercurium is particularly successful, and since 1957 has been the most popular cheeses of the Queso de Crema type. Herb manufacturers, in the hope of producing more competitive products, add excessive cream. Unfortunately, the keeping qualities of Queso de Crema are limited. The cheese must be eaten within 1 week, and it should be well wrapped to avoid contaminating smells. Mozzarella is a very popular Argentina, where the cuisine has undergone heavy Italian influence. In pizzas and filling of pasta, mozzarella is outstanding cheese. It has a rather rough texture, similar to the pasta filata, a plastic curd type. Ripening time is a minimum of 24 hours. The mozzarella must be eaten fresh. The colour is white or creamy. The body is firm and some elasticity. A favourite local way to prepare this cheese is to cut it into slices and marinate it in olive oil and spices such as paprika, ginger, cayenne, pepper and coriander. A good quality pizza cheese called Merindera comes from a place called Menzildebel. Cheddar is one of the most popular cheeses, particularly the one produced at Santa Rosa The romance of Argentina wine is produced. Agenda 2 is marinated by some connoisseurs, slices of place in cherry, whiskey or cognac, and left for 24 hours covered by a cloth. The final product is eaten with a spoon. Gouda is one of the semi-hard cheeses sold in Argentina. It's often used as sauces and flavour, for the flavour is not too dominating, and mixes nicely with the spices and a little olive oil. San Paulin is a soft, mild flavour, especially recommended as a dessert cheese. San Paulin from McGestone Factory has a very good reputation. So good, in fact, that it is considered one of the best descendants of the original cheese. It is sold under the name of Crescenta. I think we know this. Many other foreign cheeses have been copied in Romano, Sardo, Gruyere, and several blue vein types. It is interesting to note that millions of sheep hardly ever milked for cheese production, in spite of the great numbers and obvious potential. In Argentina, two large meals are prepared every day, between which the Argentinians have managed to sandwich, so to speak, next to meal. This is why you should go hungry. A greatly esteemed snack of provolone a la pata, a thick slice of provolone covered with the fresh peeled and sliced tomatoes, and lots of oregano, garlic, and parsley, which is heated and often over and under a grill until the cheese melts. Brazil. Brazil sprawls across the larger part of the South American continent, with the reputation largely built on coffee, nuts, and footballers. The northern part of Brazil is watered by the Amazon and its tributaries across the plateau, dense forests which are for the most part impenetrable, and even today there are areas which have not been explored. This is hardly surprising when you consider that Brazil jungle is the area in equal size to the whole of Central Europe. Despite its vastness, the climate is not as varied as you might expect. In the North Amazon there are tropical rain climates. The South is agreeable, moderate climate, and sufficient rainfall to have extensive pastures where enormous herds of cattle are kept. In between are large arid patches. Explains why only a small part of Brazil is cultivated yet. This is 76. The land of contradictions. The present Brazil is a land of contradictions, with a wide gap between the rich and the poor. More than half the population are farm labourers working under the most primitive conditions for extremely low wages. Yet, on the other hand, in contrast to Brazil's other South American neighbours, Brazil is an elegant showplace of modern cultural architecture. Culturally, Brazil has marked differences with other Latin American countries. Prominent are the Portuguese and West African influences that go back several centuries, but there's also traditional Indian ones. Indian heritage is poor and never grew into great civilizations, such as those pre-Columbian Peru, Mexico and Guatemala. The Incan and Aztec empires were wealthy and progressive. Their staple foods included superior sweet corn and potato, not to mention tomato, while the several Brazilian Indians were starchy manioc root, with some varieties which are poisonous. Beans have largely overtaken manioc as the great staple and probably introduced to Brazil about the same time as cheese. The Portuguese colonists of the 16th century were the first cheesemakers, producing a simple fresh type of import from the imported cattle. The country is roughly 80 million cattle, but there is no indication that dairy breeds are the most important. There could be a variety of reasons for this. This is Urquhart having a thought, not what to say about Brazil, and now she's going to speculate. One is that Brazil pigeon are a mixture of races, and none of which are rich dairy tradition, and consequently, they're relatively indifferent to dairy products. National cattle, mainly Zebu breed, are meat stocks. Brazilian farmers found that importing milk cattle was an unpractical proposition because the animals' needs for intensive care plus the problems of acclimatization. In the South, however, traditions have changed over the past 50 years. Around two of the most heavily populated areas, Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo, 80% of the Brazilian milk is now produced by Dutch, German and Polish settlers. An improving situation. Of the 7 million dairy cows, 60% are pedigree animals. Many Frisians of Jersey, the remainder are interbred with zebu types, resulting in animals with high disease resistance, good climate adaptation, and relatively good milk production. A few million fatty cows are built. Often depends on the calving date, the milk production, and the price of milk. Some of the big cattle breeders prefer this type, importing them from the United States and Canada. Breeding animals are well cared for, unlike those of the ordinary dairy farms. They produce accordingly. The farm, 5,000 to 6,000 litres yearly. The other, only 4,300 litres. When an animal has to cover 5 kilometres of ground daily to find food and drinking water, its production drops. Generally, though, Brazil's milk production is increasing at 10%. Obviously not now. So, cheese production has also increased slowly to a mark about 50,000 tonnes yearly. The typical Brazilian Minas and Pato cheese represents 70% of the total production. There's still six... there are six different Minas cheeses made from farms or small cheese factories. National language. Minas Fresco has been made of Minas Gerais since the 17th century. In today's cheese factories, pasteurized cow's milk is sour, curdled and stirred now and then. After 20 minutes, the milk reaches the appropriate thickness and salt is added. The wet mass is scooped into perforated molds and turned after 5 hours. That's interesting. I wonder if you could freeze dry milk. That would be interesting. Freeze dry to get the whey milk powder. I wonder what that is. That's how you get milk powder. Minas Espresso is a firmer consistency with regular holes. Sour milk is left for pre-ripening. Other curdles cut, warmed, and hot water stirred. After a short time, the cheesemaker pushes it into one side of his fat. Spreads it on the table and presses it into small molds at his hands. As soon as the cheese has taken shape, it is needed to put in a cloth and press for 10 minutes. A second progressing follows with a cloth, after which the cheese is brined for 6 hours. It's drained, left behind the cool room for the next day, and then is ready for the consumption. Reggiano is a kind of cooked cheese that results in the melting of sour milch quark with cream. Reggiano del Sartre refers to cheese which is not factory made, but prepared a traditional way. In the northeast, it's baked with bread, often eaten for breakfast. The cheese has a thin yellow-white skin, a close, firm body, and a sweet, lightly sour flavour. Also popular is a dessert. It is served with a half of Brazilian marmalade sold enough to cut. Many foreign types is made, including prato or mozzarella or quadrillo. The quality of Brazilian cheese itself is slowly improving. Much technological help has been gained from France, Italy and Germany, West Germany. In particular, the Specialized Institute provides education and research to the dairy field. A final boost in the national cheese industry. Because the import duties, cheeses from abroad become very excessive. Brazilians have developed a liking for cheese. Breakfast in Brazil might consist of cheese sandwiches such as lunch and supper, but both hot meals. There's plenty of opportunities to incorporate cheese in today's menu. A typical luncheon dish is an omelet covered with white cheese and then rolled. Baked rice is also served with cheese, as slices of brown beans onions and garlics and tomatoes. You get a sense that Urquhart has really reached the end of his tether here. Chile, the last one, it's a very short one. Chile is a very hot place, isn't it? Nearly 3,000 miles long and in places less than 60 miles wide, Chile must be the world's narrowest country. Between the Pacific and the volcanic Andes, its fertile valley extends southwards. There are a few yards middle with orchards and crops of alfalfa grown at Castle Fodder. In the south, in Terra del Fuego, the sea and the ice have shattered the coastline into thousands of islands, great herds of sheep graze. Through Chile, cattle have been established since the 16th century. Their milk was made into cheese on the haciendas. After 45, purebred milking cattle were imported and the cheese factory obtained modern equipment from Europe and Denmark. Chile's Chipochanco. Cheese industry in the modern Chile consists of 50 dairy plants. They produce about 20 million kilograms of cheese annually, accounting for 90% of the total production and 60% of factory-made Tibo cheese. A traditional cheese type which is still made in the old farmlands, steads and countrysides, but much at smaller quantities. The fresh yield milk that goes to Chanco was first curdled and then the curd cut into fine lira. After a rest, the whey is partly removed and the salt added. Having stirred the mass for 10 minutes, the cheesemaker proceeds to work the curd by hand. He wraps it in cheesecloth and puts it into perforated molds. The mass is thoroughly kneaded and pummeled, after which it is pressed for 24 hours. A well-rotten cheese is whitish yellow in colour and ochre and rind. It has a mild flavour and a paste that has a few holes. Most Chanco is made around San Diego. Other varieties. Quesillos is a small, flat, round flesh cheese, very popular at the first course of Sundays with a little garnish of lettuce, celery, and a couple of slices of avocado, and a slice of tomato with occasional addition of ham. A lot of queso fresco is made, and common with the South American countries, it goes under the name of fresco, queso blanco, and a variety of fancy names. Although Chile prefers meat rather than cheeses, the former often being cheaper, a range of good imitations of popular cheeses types are well established in the market. That finishes America. We're on to Africa. Well, I'll do Africa. I'll just do Africa now because it's Africa is just one country and South Africa. There you go. So, that's another continent, Africa. When David Livingstone was exploring the upper Zambezi River in North Angola, he met a Bornola tribe which showed him his herd of 30 beautiful cows which had been bred for meat. Chief Cutter was delighted to learn from Livingstone that cows could be milked as well, and their milk was a sort of food. In common with many African tribes, it never occurred to the Boers to milk their cattle. Since milk is not part of the African diet, it follows that cheese is unknown. Cheese in North Africa. A majority of African indigenous cheeses are found above the Sahara. Tunisia is one of the few countries of profitable cheese production. Sicel is a semi-hard cylindrical cheese of 3 to 15 kilograms, with a solid white elastic body and many small holes. The taste is sharpened by paprika grains and added, and the cheese is often rather rancid. It's made of sheep's milk and mixed with a little cow's and goat milk. The curd is pressed in high cylindrical baskets and covered with salt and cured in damp cellars. Sicel is eaten after a month and can be left to ripen for 3 months, at which point it's semi-hard cheese and it's more than a year. It becomes a hard cheese if desired. Testori is a ball-shaped fresh cheese from which the curd is eaten to obtain a fine, smooth texture. After a period of rest, the curd is formed by hand into balls, which is placed into a brine bath for 24 hours and then taken fresh. Oriental is a brine cheese, like feta. Numidia is a sheep's or goat's milk cheese. It's sharp-tasting and blue-veined. Like sard, a sheep's milk is made from near Beja in the north, rather like Spanish Manchello. Now, what I was going to say is that we're going on to Egypt here, and Egypt is a real cheese powerhouse. I wonder what's happening here. Egypt water buffalo cheeses. We know that ancient Egyptians were among the earliest peoples who learned the technique of cheese making, just as they had learned to break bread and wine. Cheese was included among the provisions in Cure the Death, travelling rations and the journey to the next world. Cheese, as well as wheat, also served as a means of payment and wages. Rent and taxes, the system was maintained in Europe until the 19th century. Most indigenous cheeses are made from milk of water buffalo, often supplemented by cow's milk. Like the cow, the water buffalo used as both a draft and milking animal. Sheep and goats are found on the farms, but their milk yield is generally low. Egyptian farmers make a cheese called karoresh. They leave the milk to sour spontaneously, and after 1 to 3 days, the cream floats up to the top of the milk. Oh my god. This is skimmed off and churned into butter. The milk mass of the milk is scooped out and turned into cloths and allowed the weight to run off. The lean curd is then cut in rectangular pieces and sprinkled with salt. They are left there for a few days to enable the salt to penetrate, at which point the cheese is ready for consumption. It can be also ripened in brine. Breda is made from the farms and cheese factories from raw skim milk and pasteurized milk, either from cow or buffalo. The curd is put in a mold, turned a few times, and put to cloth pressed between the two planks. The fresh cheese may be then cured in boiled and cooled whey, which has been retained for the processing process. Milch, like Breda, is made from skim milk, and this is not Egyptian cheese. Instead of using whey, however, the cheeses are cured in salted milk, or a mixture of salted milk and water. Spices are often added, and the cheese ripens in pots for a year, developing a very strong Roquefort-like taste. But Roquefort is a sheep's cheese, so I don't know, it's made... Yeah, okay. Rumi is a cylindrical cheese from buffaloes and cow milk. It's and made in cheese factories, left to ripen for 3 months. At room temperature, the cheese develops a dry rind, a semi-hard body with a small holes for a strong, salty flavour. Not unlike the mature Gouda, Rass is related to Rumi. It's a factory-made cheese whose production is not confined to the seasons of January and June because the prices of some milk would affect the profits. Is confined, okay. There are 8 medium-sized cheese factories in Egypt, but they suffer from a shortage of skilled personnel. Several foreign types of cheese are produced, in part to accommodate the considerable number of Europeans living in the country. And the cheeses are manufactured are Kashval, Cheddar, Emmental and Roquefort, south of Sahara. In the dry Sahel, south of Sahara Desert, attempts are being made to teach the population to keep their goats in fenced areas and use milk for human consumption. Niger has large herds of cattle, around 6 million goats, 4 million cows and 2.5 million sheep. The Touaregs is a north, in the north, maintain some 50% of the population, but a greater proportion belongs to the nomad Peluha, a shepherd people who move their herds to the steppes and daily accommodate cattle from the village. In periods of drought, large numbers of cattle die, and great efforts are being made to improve matters by introducing better water supply, more efficient working methods, and animal care and regular vaccination. Kenya and Tanzania. Of all African countries, Kenya is the most advanced in agriculture and cattle breeding due to the influence of the European colonists. There is a training school at Naivasha, which teaches dairy production. Fresh cheeses are made by filtering skim milk through cloth suspended and a tripod of branches. Naivasha is also a large dairy factory, which exports its cheeses to Uganda, Tanzania and Zanzibar, India, Pakistan and the countries around the Persian Gulf, and even to Germany and England. The Tanzanian has 3 small cheese factories to make cheese from raw milk, but they are not high quality. There is an issue to combine these wildly dispersed cheese factories into order to increase the production and improve the distribution. Traditional eating habits and tastes will have to change, however, before the cheese can be found a ready market in these areas. Just coming to the last thing of Africa. Finishing here, I thought I'd finish this off. So that just leaves the Middle East and Australia and Asia. South Africa. In 1652, Jan van Riebeeck was not only the first Dutch colonist in South Africa, but he was also the first person to attempt cheese making there. It was not a very successful attempt, but he at least established a precedent. 5 years later, the first real colony was founded by 9 Dutchmen, ex-soldiers and sailors, who chose farming as their new profession. From the Holtenots, they brought cattle, animals that soon acquired the name Afrikaner. The livestock had all the desired qualities and colonists lived and worked. Later settlers arrived, bringing Frisians, cattle with them, and when the British turned up, they were accompanied by Ashes and Jersey crossbreeding of these different stocks. The Afrikaners produced an exceptional dairy cow, but the development was slow. It was not until the end of the last century the government decided to stimulate the cheese industry. Experts trained in the United States, Canada and Australia were engaged to visit farms, cheese-making installations and to demonstrate the process of making cheddar. The efforts were very successful and could be considered the foundation of South Africa's modern dairy industry. As always, cattle fodder was of prime importance. The country is fortunate in that there were plenty of it available. Long before the arrival of colonists, the Bantu tribe were cultivating sorghum for the cattle. British planted maize originally provided food for the natives, but it soon proved excellent for livestock. Certainly the most useful prolific fodder and clover like alfalfa. Getting organised. A certain Joseph Blaine, sometimes called the father of South Africa's dairy industry, established the country's first cheese processing plant. Success encouraged others, and after the Boer War, more cheesemakers established themselves, mainly in the eastern and central region of the country, where the best conditions were to be found. In those days, transportation of the inland area was slow and difficult. In 1914, there was less than 500,000 kilograms of cheese were made, and 2.5 kilograms had to be imported. 2.5 million kilograms had to be imported. The First World War set up the prices, and the result, the dairy produce became more interesting economic position. It soon became apparent that the price controls were needed, and the dairy industry controllable was founded in 1930. A smaller cheesemakers went out of business, and the large centrally placed cheese factories with good supply facilities sprang up, causing the cost of production to fall sharply. There are now 33 factories producing about 20 million tons of cheese a day. The Dutch English taste of cheese, definitely noticeable. Cheddar is the most popular in the rectangular shape, and rindless and prepacked Gouda in its original cartwheel form, and baby Gouda weighing half a kilogram. There are also top sellers. Some more originally foreign cheeses are also produced, including Brie, Camembert, some Italian types like Greek Feta and Bucharana's Blue Vein cheese. A cheese called Drakensberg is also gaining popularity. This is a cream cheese of South African origin. A quick ripener and a lovely creamy taste. In addition, a lot of the fresh cheese, the cottage cheese, is eaten. Cheese is divided into 5 groups according to fat content: high fat, whole milk, medium fat, low fat, skim milk cheese. Processed cheese is always made from cheddar. Most cheeses are made from cow's milk, although there are growing interest in fresh cheeses from goat milk. That's how we end, unfortunately. We've ended our go through South America and Africa is covered rather quickly. And I'll just tell you, we're on page 173, and I think the last country on Earth. It's 94, and the last country is New Zealand. So there's 73 to 93. There's 21 pages left, and we'll get there. And thanks a lot for listening. I really doubt that anyone is listening, but it doesn't matter. It's part of my rehab to really push myself every day to read as much and get as much skill out there. And as I read, I hope to improve. And it gives me time to think and process information. Thanks a lot for listening.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.